You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 of The Voice, local news and talk. Christopher DeSimone, Bruce Ash, and you. Before we get to special super terrific guest Corey DeAngelis, I just want to tell you, tonight I'll be there. It's the Oro Valley Chamber is holding their candidate forum for what's going on. So 6 o'clock is the council forum for the council people, and then it's Danny Sharp v. Joe Winfield at 7:15. And we'll see if Joe Winfield brings his binder that he has to read every word he says, so which he doesn't. He does a lot. So after being mayor, if he's still reading off of his binder, we got a problem.
I'm sure it's going to be the rumble and the jumble.
It's it's a rumble and a jumble. So let's go right to the phones. We have special guest, a senior fellow, Federation for Children. It's Corey DeAngelis. Corey, welcome to Wake Up Tucson.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I always like to say when you got cool titles like that, are there junior fellows over there?
I don't think so. I think I'm the only senior fellow as well, so I'll take it.
I'm going to rename myself senior fellow of this talk show before it's all over. So
we give ourselves 10 titles.
Take it. Talk about Arizona, and Bruce and I have been watching politics for eons in this state. And this one almost seemed to sneak up on us, especially because in the legislature, both houses, you know, we had the thinnest margin that they've had in quite a time, quite so many years. And then magically, you know, they were farting around with their budget for months. They're coming up on a hard, you know, we could, you know, because the fiscal year starts on July 1. And then magically, out of all of this thing, quote, what we're calling the gold standard of school choice came out of it.
Yeah, this is the biggest school choice victory in U.S. history. You know, if Arizona and Florida had been neck and neck for a while, claiming the school choice championship. And with this victory, I think Arizona is clearly takes the number one spot and cements itself as the top state for educational freedom in the nation. And what's interesting to me is when Governor Ducey signs this, and he's expected to do so soon, he'll essentially be, you know, walking up to Governor DeSantis of Florida and snatching out of his hands the school choice championship belt of the nation. So it'll be a sight to see, and it's a great time for Arizona families. This will be available to over a million students in the system right now, and this is the gold standard of school choice. It allows every single family, no income caps, regardless of background, to take their kids' state-funded education dollars to the education provider of their choosing, whether that's a public school, private school, or a home-based education option.
The I saw you go DeSantis on Twitter about all this. So,
paging DeSantis is what I put. Yeah. It's friendly competition. Every Republican governor in particular should be pushing for this top spot. Doug Ducey has it right now, and with this victory, I mean, there isn't any higher you can go. This is the gold standard of school choice. So the fight now is for the other governors to match him. I mean, look just down to Texas. Governor Abbott had a great speech earlier this year arguing for the funding to follow the child to any type of school, public, private, or charter school. And that was his strongest voice of support for school choice that I have ever heard coming from Governor Abbott of Texas. And look, Texas has much bigger, stronger majorities of Republicans than Arizona. So if Arizona can get it done with a one-seat majority in each chamber, a state like Texas should be able to have universal school choice too.
Bruce and I were talking about that. Let's talk about the road to this, right? And let's talk about the road of the failure of the public K through 12 system. Not all schools, but a lot of these school districts are. So talk about the road to this decision, but then also how it almost got sped up, hyper sped through lockdowns and sending kids home to hang out with their parents.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I put it before is that COVID didn't break the government school system. In a lot of ways, it was already broken. And the past 2 years simply shined a spotlight on the main problem with K-12 education all across the country, which happens to be a massive long existing power imbalance between the public school monopoly and individual families. And families kind of woke up. They saw the private schools were fighting to reopen, the public school teachers' unions were fighting to remain closed. And the difference there was not one of competence or benevolence. I think the difference there was one of incentives, that one of those sectors received children's education dollars, regardless of whether they even opened their doors for business. So, of course, you had the teachers' unions fighting to keep their doors closed because they could keep their jobs, work from home, not have to provide the in-person services, which is a rational decision in the current messed up system that we have. And it was worse than that, though, because they could hold children's education hostage to secure multiple multi-million dollar ransom payments from the federal government. And we saw a lot of that funding flow into the state of Arizona. Nationwide, it was $190 billion in these ransom payments or COVID relief funding, which turned out to be about $3,000 to $4,000 per kid since March of 2020. So it was profitable to keep their doors closed for as long as possible. But there's another piece to this. With the remote learning, which I like to call remotely learning because it led to so much learning loss, it hurt kids in so many ways. Families, one, they started to understand that the system doesn't give all that much of a crap about their kids. But then two, the side benefit was that they got to see what was happening in the classroom. And so some families started to see another avenue that motivated them to support the ability to take their kids' education dollars elsewhere, which is whether they're aligned with the curriculum or not. And some families who thought their kids were in great public schools, maybe it was an A-rated school, maybe the kids were getting good grades on their standardized test scores and report cards, but they saw another dimension of quality, which happened to be curriculum alignment with their values. And that supercharged the movement for school choice as well. And in 2021, we called it the year of school choice. 19 states, including Arizona, expanded or enacted programs to fund students as opposed to systems. It was a banner year for educational freedom. But with this victory, just this past week, Arizona one-upped all of those victories.
Bruce. So, Corey, this is Bruce Ash. I'm a guest here today on the show. And I think what has happened in Arizona is truly extraordinary. We've sort of been on this road for a while because children have been able to move from district to district or school to school, and they've been able to get out of some of these failing schools. But clearly, the last couple of years, I think, just wrecked, you know, whatever faith parents had in these different school districts. How big of an issue is school choice, is education going to be in the 2020 election?
It's all up to the Republicans and how much they want to win and how much they want to lean into the issue. I mean, look what happened with Governor Youngkin in Virginia. The issue was decided on the case on the issue of education, and that's pretty clear from Washington Post exit polling that education was the number two issue in that election, second to only jobs and the economy. And Youngkin won with those voters who chose education as their top priority by 6 percentage points in a race that he won 2 percentage points overall. So he overperformed significantly with those voters. And it all started when his opponent, Terry McAuliffe, said, quote, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach," end quote, on the debate stage. That blew up in his face. And instead of trying to backpedal, Terry McAuliffe tried to lean into his anti-parent rhetoric because he wanted to remain friends with Randy Weingarten and the teachers' unions. He even had Randy Weingarten stumping for him the night before the election.
Right, I remember.
And there was one more piece to that, in that he also was a school choice hypocrite. He tried to imply that he sent his kids to public schools on Meet the Press one day, and I called it out on Twitter, obviously. Hey, you sent all 4 or 5 year kids to private schools. You're a hypocrite because you don't want less advantaged families to have the same opportunities. So that's politically beneficial to support parental rights in education, especially right now, and it's a form of political suicide to come out against it.
So, Tracy, what's next? What's next?
For Arizona, I mean, this has to be implemented and families have to apply. It's a huge expansion, so I'm looking forward to seeing it roll out. Obviously, the governor still has to sign the bill, and he's expected to do so soon. I haven't heard of a specific date of when that's going to happen, but everybody is pretty dang sure. There's no doubt about it that Governor Ducey is going to sign it because he He said during the State of the State in January 2022, he said, send me the bills and I'll sign them. Let's expand school choice in any way we can. So that's another great part about this, is that Governor Ducey didn't just sit back. He called for this to happen in his State of the State in January. And I'm glad the legislature took him up on that offer and sent that bill to his desk, especially the Republicans who voted in favor of this monumental bill.
Corey, can you hold on for a couple of commercials, and then I want to come back. There's a question I want to ask, and the question I want to ask is, what is Corey DeAngelis, senior fellow with the American Federation of Children, tell the K-12ers who are whining like you would never believe about this, and how they helped us get to this point overall? But because they always say you're going to rob people of their kids of their education dollars by doing this. I'd like to know your answer when we come back, okay?
Totally.
All right, Corey DeAngelis, Bruce Ash, Christy Simone, you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. That's what we're doing, sowing the seeds of love here, baby. Wake up.
Tower of Power with a soul vaccination.
All right, you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Christy Simone, Bruce Ash, ESQ spinning the tunes. So we got Corey DeAngelis, a now senior fellow at American Federation of Children.
Of course, if you've seen Corey's picture on the website, he looks like he's about 26.
He is. He's a very youthful young man. So I was asking, so we have horribly performing public schools in Tucson, Corey. TUSD, our biggest one, Tucson Unified School District, it's the social emotional capital of not teaching anyone, but literally 22% of 35,000 kids are reading at level, 22%. And then Sunnyside next door is at 16% of kids reading at level. But they're the ones that are going to be yelling and crying from the roofs about how this is the worst thing that ever happened. If they came to you and said, Corey, how can you support something like this? You would tell the whiners what?
Well, if you're doing a good job, you wouldn't have so much to worry about.
Ding, ding, ding.
Typically what gets me blocked on Twitter is because this is their main talking point. They'll say it over and over again. And I'll just respond by saying, well, why would giving families a choice defund public schools? And then they can't answer. They'll block me, or they'll have to say one of two things. They'll have to say, one, well, it's because families will choose other better schools. It's like, well, yeah, that's the point. That's a good argument for school choice, not an argument against it. You want to trap kids in a failing school. That's not a really good position, and it shows that you're not confident in your product. When the reality is, in response to school choice competition, the public schools do actually up their game. So school choice doesn't destroy public schools. It actually makes them better. And my other and they could also say, oh, well, families are going to choose these other schools, but it's because they don't know any better. You know, those are low-income families, and they just don't have the educational, background to make these decisions. But the reality is that's a paternalistic argument, and parents from all income levels know and care more about their kids' educational needs than any bureaucrat sitting in offices hundreds of miles away. And just one more response is, look, it's not your money to begin with. School choice doesn't defund public schools. If anything, public schools defund families, and school choice initiatives just return that same money to the hands of the rightful owners, or at least the intended beneficiaries of that funding. We should fund students, not systems. Education funding is supposed to be meant for educating children, not for propping up and protecting a particular institution. And what's funny is we do this already with higher education, with Pell Grants, with for low-income kids, and the GI Bill for veterans. The funding goes to the student, and they could take it to the public or community college if they want, but you could also take it to a public university or a private university, a religious or non-religious university. The funding follows the decision of the student. We do the same with pre-K programs. We do the same thing with food stamps and Medicaid, all these other initiatives. The funding follows the decision of the individual student or the family. And it's only when it comes to K-12 education, those in-between years, where the other side freaks out. And the reality is it's all about power dynamics. Choice is the norm with higher education, pre-K, and everything else. But choice threatens an entrenched special interest that overwhelmingly donates to the Democratic Party. And so they fight as hard as possible against any change to the status quo. But Republican legislators in Arizona and the people themselves have woken up, and they've started to figure out that there isn't any good reason to fund a failing closed institution when you can fund the student directly instead and empower families. And Arizona just did this, so it's totally great news.
So we got about a minute and a half left, and I just want to, well, Bruce, talk about the future, and we were talking a little bit off air, and I have a couple of friends who are involved in charter schools, and we've been talking about the importance of, and what also in the last 2 years has brought about, is the homeschooling aspect, right? And there's credible, hopefully most more credible curriculums out there. Talk about the future of homeschooling in the midst of all this.
Yeah, I mean, so there's been a lot of people voting with their feet even before these school choice programs were expanded starting in 2021. But homeschooling on a national level, according to census data, doubled over the pandemic period from about 3% to 6% or so students homeschooling. And so there's a surge there. There was a surge to charter schools nationwide, too. While the government-run schools lost about 3% of their population, about 1.5 million kids nationwide, the charter school sector saw over 100,000 student increase, which turned out to be much more than that. Nationwide is about a 7% increase in charter school enrollment. So families were already seeking out alternative options. I think we're going to see that continue, especially now that so many states, and especially Arizona, have empowered more families. I mean, they only lost 3% of their population in the government schools in 2020. If everybody had universal school choice, I bet it would have been a much more massive exodus from that system.
The other thing we talk about, Corey, is the schools and the charter school associations do a crappy job informing the parents who are ignorant of their choices, and they need to do a better job also.
So. Yeah, totally. We need to get the information to parents, and hopefully many parents apply for this upcoming initiative in Arizona. I know a lot of people are excited about it, so I'm looking forward to see how it rolls out.
Well, good talking to you. A great debut on Wake Up Tucson. Hopefully we'll do it again. And we have to fix higher education the next time we talk to each other.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks, Corey.
Corey, have a good day, bud.
Thank you.
Corey DeAngelis, Senior Fellow, American Federation of Children. Bruce and I, we're going to talk about, I want to talk about Forest Keys when we come back. Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 Voice. 7:35 in the morning. It's a little Pete Townsend on a tea day. Let's see our holidays real quick. Paul Bunyan Day.
How about Babe? When was Babe born?
Babe, I don't know if Babe has her own day or not. So I'd love to find out that. But so the Babe the Blue Ox, of course. National Tapioca Day.
I love tapioca pudding.
Look at that. There you go. So Tapioca Day. National Newspaper Columnist Day. So congratulations to Jonathan Hoffman and Craig Cantoni for being two of the only ones that might get it. Wild Bill's got a good one once in a while, too. But and then, of course, the
Barney Barney does a column in Town Hall every
that's
now
true.
And then.
And then Tim Steller. That's next week. That's National Weenie Day. So, sorry.
Well, his opinions are published as news.
That's pretty much presented as news. You're correct. Tucson kept the streak alive. This was yesterday afternoon on Speedway in Swan. We had another flipped over car in front of the Circle K. I mean, it's quite a hoot, as to say. So, and
it's the TikTok helium in your tire challenge.
So Mark from Games and Gadgets, like, he says, like, what the heck's going on? What's going on, right? And I sent him back the video of Dave Chappelle with Rick James saying cocaine, it's a hell of a drug. I mean, this is basically people drugged out of their minds and looking at their phones, driving, you know, 90 in a 40. That's the only way they can. They have to hit a certain velocity to keep flipping like this.
There was a police car chase, where a Ford Mustang was doing 169 miles an hour. And there were other cars in the same group more or less keeping up with them.
This is in Tucson?
No, it was not in Tucson.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like something on the 101.
that is a perfect place to go 169 miles an hour, too.
The we were talking, while he's looking that up, we were talking about this is something that, and if you just started listening over the last few months, is a name called Forest Keys. Okay. Now, Forrest was a young man going to the University of Arizona. I believe he was from Maryland or Pennsylvania. I keep forgetting which one of those states. And I think Maryland. And, you know, he was 20 years old. He seemed to be a very likable, nice guy, you know, pretty involved in stuff. I remember, if you remember, Matt Russell's daughter was here, Katie, because she was in that same marketing PR world, and she said that she got to know him a little bit and said he was a really cool guy. So Forrest was gunned down in the Cherry Avenue parking garage by three babyface killers in 21.
17 years old, I believe, when they did it.
Right. And so, now remember, this is right off of the heels of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, all of this jazz. Okay? Now, two of these people, Ruben Young and Alonzo Orozco, were both sentenced to 30 years at age 18. For second-degree murder and aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon. Roberto Joaquin Camargo was sentenced to 3 years probation. He was in the car, I guess. He gets 3 years probation. And Bruce, this is... I love word salads. This one's the best. Camargo must get a GED or diploma and complete moral recognition therapy.
Wow.
Can we send some of our elected officials to do moral recognition therapy?
You'd have overcrowded schools if you did.
So what I want to get to here is Forest Keys. There was, you know, a day or so of memorial for Forest. And then he's the unmentioned young man in Tucson, Arizona. Right? The local elected officials, including the mayor and all of these folks, right, who say that they're for Black Lives Matter, right? We have the banner that was put up, right? Cicilline tried to do the thin blue line in front of the help support cops, but he, quote, was a racist, so we had to go after that. Nikki Lee, the only thing she's done that she's proud of is some sort of ordinance that you can't discriminate against people getting a black Afro-American haircut, whatever is going on, okay? Then, and then, of course, we had the fat, coked-up guy who was terrorizing his own grandmother who died when the police were trying to get a hold of him. And, of course, even after they were cleared the first time, Rahina had a crap fit, it sound like, and... the chief had to put these guys through another kangaroo court, and they all lost their jobs, including one who was an African-American police officer. Okay. Now, Forrest Keyes has been forgotten quickly by all of the... And actually, what his death wasn't even almost recognized or mentioned by these people. And this goes back to this kid I remember during all the Black Lives Matter kerfuffle in 20. I wish I could find the video because I'm angry with myself that I didn't save it someplace. And it was an African-American young man, probably Forrest age, and he was just standing there at this protest. He wasn't in it. He was like standing on the edge watching it. And the TV news is there, and they asked him why you're here, blah, blah, blah. And he said this unbelievably sage thing for a 20-year-old. I would never come up with this when I was 20, okay? He said, what's really confusing here is that what these people are saying is that your life only matters to them by the color of the person who killed you. Right? And he was talking about they were ignoring all the black on black violence, right? And all those kids that get killed in Chicago every week.
It's almost all black on black or brown on brown.
Right. And all of those lives don't. But if you're killed by a white guy, then all of a sudden to these people, your life means something. Right. So look at the University of Arizona, two diversity czars. You're taking extra diversity classes. And the reason why they couldn't get fired up about Forrest Keyes getting murdered in the parking lot where all of you go to park your car to go to your vaunted basketball games in the Sands Club, all right, is because he was killed by Hispanic 17-year-old gangbangers. If he was killed by a white kid, they would have built a memorial to Forrest.
Well, maybe they still should.
And they should. But this kid was murdered by three gangbangers, and because they're Hispanic, no one wants to talk about it. All souls matter. No matter who, how you die or who kills you, your life and your soul matters. And so when this, the idea that these two little gangbangers got 30 years apiece, and then the other one got moral recognition therapy. That sounds like a Conover special right there.
Probably.
Moral recognition therapy. I just want to tell you, is this is one of, Tucson has a lot of sins, right? But this one morally is a large sin. That the idea that this kid who, talking about, I remember his mother talking about when she said goodbye to him that year to go to the U of A. She never would have thought that her son was not coming back to see her after school, the school year, going to the University of Arizona to get a PR marketing degree. And that's one of, again, this is why the city will continue to fail and suck, is because of things like this. The idea that, remember, Rahina and Lane Santa Cruz lost their cookies over the fat, naked guy who was coked up terrorizing his grandmother. Remember, they kept on saying he was calling for his nana. That was the nana who he was terrorizing. So much that she had to call the cops on her own grandson. They had more sympathy for the naked, coked-up guy because he was killed by, quote, not killed. He died because he was struggling with cops.
Right.
Right? Than a young 20-year-old African-American kid who was murdered in cold blood at the University of Arizona. Matt Neely.
Don't forget, right before they killed Forrest Keyes, they had an altercation with some young ladies on campus. Those young ladies could have also could have been the victim. These guys were out for trouble.
So the first Latina mayor, Latina meaning that she's a woman, okay, will not even say a word about these young bangers harassing women. And then I don't know if Forrest got involved to say, hey, leave him alone, and then it went to this level. But the idea that Rahina Romero and Lane Santa Cruz can't even talk about Forrest Keyes is disgusting. It's disgusting. It's morally repugnant. And of course, let's go back to the losers in the media. Right? This is mild crickets with those guys and girls. Right? Because he wasn't killed by the proper person in their mind. Right? If you were killed by a cop or a white guy, it's on like Donkey Kong. And the idea that I don't know why, it just bothers me. Forrest's soul means less because he was killed by two Hispanic kids makes me sick to my stomach.
And that's the problem, is, and you're exactly right. Everything in this country has become political, okay? Losing a life by violence is a tragedy, no matter if you're white, Asian, Latino, Black Americans, anybody attacks on people because of the way they look or you know, where they are. All of these are horrific acts. The issue is violence in our society, and the issue is not enough cops on the street and not enough enforcement and judicial punishment for people who commit these acts and being responsible for what they do. Now, the two young men did get 30 years. They'll be out in 20.
Right.
But that life has been lost. And in Chicago, this is just a blip on the sidewalk, because there's, you know, 8 to 10, 6, 12 people killed every weekend in that city.
It's even higher than that
on
a weekend.
And most of them are of color.
Eastside Matt.
On top of that, you have three 17-year-old kids who were either 15 or 16 when the pandemic started, and their social fabric was taken away from them. They had to go and not watch computer screens for school, because they probably were not watching computer screens for school.
Duh.
And so then you've got the breakdown of the family. You've got the breakdown of any sort of guidance or structure in life. 17 years old, they're out doing this.
Yeah. Again, not like the fools at TUSD are going to take any blame or responsibility for the lives they ruined with basically unscientific lockdowns at all. No science to it at all. It was all horse crap. 7:47 in the morning. Christy Simone, Bruce Ash, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show. 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.
Mel Tillis on.
Mel Tillis, who could actually, you know, remember he stuttered when he talked, but he could sing. So I remember he drove in the Cannonball Run with Terry Bradshaw, I believe, from that's the Pittsburgh Steelers, if I
that
remember correctly.
That great, one of the top 100 movies of all time. You know, some of the best conversations we have on Wake Up Tucson are the conversations we have in between. And I have to commend my friend Chris. That last segment was, I think, something that should be recorded and played in your best of for a long, long time, because all lives do matter, and life has become rather inexpensive these days, and the respect that we have for one another, whether it's our positions on things or just the way we lead our lives or who we are, but boy, we need a serious mood and life adjustment, not just in America, but all over the world. We used to think that life was cheap only in Asia or only in Africa. Life has become pretty damn cheap right here in Tucson, Arizona. In our neighborhoods, life is cheap.
Yeah, and that's where you're at, right? It's just not the fact that we don't have a appreciation for those other lives, right? A lot of people are brothers who have no appreciation for their own life.
Right.
Right? They've been brought up in such a way, or lack of a way of being brought up, right, that they don't, you know, look what they do to their own bodies.
Don't tell me what to do.
I know. My body, my choice. But that's what we're talking about, right? Is that, and that's where a lot of these bad decisions come from, right? Is that they don't have any respect for their own lives. Right, you would say, if I had respect for my own life, maybe I wouldn't do things to ruin it ruining someone else's life.
Right, right, right.
Right, I wouldn't be messed up on fentanyl and driving 100 miles an hour down Speedway if I had any conception. But again, it's one generation raises the next generation raises the next generation. Right, and what has happened is there is a good portion of our brothers and sisters out there that have been brought up with no social upbringing skills. There's no morals. There's no respect for themselves. There's no respect for their body. There's no respect for how do men and women together create life together. It's an amazing thing, right?
Yeah, it is.
So Shawnee Mac just went through the birth of his child, Mac, right? So we got Mac, okay? All right. And he, Sean is, you know, it's very... Sean speechless, right? But I'm sure that whole thing, I could tell he was blown away. He's, you know, by the birth of his child, being right in that room with right Ash and experiencing right the birth of his child, right? And so what happens is we've taken those kind of events, right? That a miracle of life event, and we've just made it run of the mill a lot. Right? And so, again, all souls matter. And I told you, when I was saying off air, I said, hey, if you're a white guy or girl who doesn't think all lives matter, go to hell. That you know, wherever you're at, if you don't think all souls matter, you're already living life two steps behind. Right? And you're not here to make things better. You're making things worse. And that's where we're at. I mean, and that's why this Forest Keys thing is our Tucson example of it's more important by who you're killed by than the life you led and the extinguishing of that life. That's the part that makes me sick to my stomach. And when the mayor walks around pontificating about...
A million trees?
Million trees. But also, remember, she's the anti-gun. Right? She's the gun violence. She said when she comes, right when she walked into being the mayor, she's like, I'm going to reduce gun violence in my town. Right? And remember, she only does gun control. That's her thing. She's only going to do it by taking away the guns of legal people. Right? Well, this guy, Forest Keys, an up and coming rising soul at the University of Arizona, was murdered by a gun. So, Rahina, where are you on the gun? Where did these kids get the gun? Does anyone know this? I don't know if anyone knows this yet. Right? But that's the part that makes you sick. And that's just kind of, and you know, and this is where we're at with the Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs case, right? Is, you know, you got to go deep. Why? How did we get to abortion on demand? Right? Why is this a thing? Why are we having so many abortions? Let's have that discussion. I can have all the other discussions. Let's have that discussion. What is going on out there that we're having all of the? I understand people have urges. I got urges. Don't trust me. I've had them. Okay. But I'm telling you is the idea of why are we doing what we're doing, right? It's a lack of respect of men and women about what you can do with your bodies, right? Peter Parker, remember the Spider-Man?
Sure.
His Uncle Ben told him, right? This haunted him the rest of his life. With great power comes great responsibility, right? And you know something? We have this amazing power, whether you believe it's in conjunction with the divine or it's just this thing that happens.
Right.
Whatever you believe, right, is we have this amazing power within our loins to create another life, right? Well, you know something? What percentage of kids, adults, or whatever are brought up realizing that there's great responsibility that comes with that great power, right? And that's the other problem. They don't even have that in their brains anymore. Look, I'm a carnal Catholic, and even though we're pro-life and anti-abortion and all that, the Catholic Church sucks at teaching their own people anything. First of all, they suck about teaching about their own faith.
Right.
Right? But when you talk about these kind of things, they're not taught why. Right? That's the thing, right? They'll tell you, don't do this. Well, why not? Right? Again, I brought it up with my brother yesterday. Pope John Paul wrote this thing called Evangelium Vitae, Gospel of Life. And, you know, go read the crib notes on it. There's great quotes in it because what it talks about is why Catholics are pro-life, right? And it's deep and it's varied and it's all over the place on why, right? And why it's important and why a culture of death, which we seem to be part of right now. He called it culture of death in the 80s. What would Pope John Paul think we're at right now in 2022? I mean, we're swimming in the culture of death right now.
We are.
You know? So let's go to break, 7:59 in the morning. My friend Elaine Beck is here, and she's got an exciting announcement that, remember yesterday when we were talking about the Roe v. Wade situation, that the pro-life side have to now step up their game? The ball's in your court. There's going to be all these women who maybe you didn't want them to get an abortion, and maybe they're not going to get an abortion, but they still need help.
And that's our next challenge.
It
really is, as a society.
That's why I think what Elaine's announcement ties perfectly into this. So
it does.
You're on Wake Up Tucson, Bruce and Chris, wake up.